the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Glad to have you on board with us in this wonderful weather. Those of you who are out there, except for the people in the Southern Hemisphere who are now going into winter, but we're sorry about that. Great show for you this week. This week, it is all about the guys, and you're wondering, why in the world, Lisa, are you even talking right now? Well, I just figured I would give my little plug for this show. For all of you men out there, we love you, we want to hear from you, and we want to make sure that the show addresses stuff that you guys are dealing with from time to time. So I am stepping back this week for our roundtable. You are going to hear from Andrew Hess, who you've heard on the show before. He's going to guest host for us with a panel of guys talking about what it means to be a man, how to be a godly man, the influences that shaped that for you growing up, how you can minister to men right where you are, and really what good male friendships look like when it comes to accountability, when it comes to just keeping it real, when it comes to pursuing relationships and understanding how to implement that in your own life. This is by the guys, for the guys. So make sure you check that out here. For our culture segment, you're going to hear from Joe White. You know him as the founder of Kanakut Camps here in the central U.S. And a guy who has really hugely impacted the whole mentorship movement among men. He has a group called Men at the Cross. You can check that out online. We'll have the link for you on the show blog as well. But great insights from a man who has a passion for men. He's now an older guy. I don't think he'd mind if I said that, but just loves younger men and wants to see them raise up as the next generation of leaders within the church and within the family. And then our inbox questions, speaking of men, we have John Thomas back here. So John is going to weigh in on an inbox question from a guy who is really talking about how to communicate attraction to his girlfriend when she's saying, you know, I don't even know if you're really attracted to me. And he's trying to maintain a standard of purity in that. So that's kind of a tough thing. So three segments here for the guys. And of course, ladies, you are going to want to listen in because we always want to hear what what the guys have to say when we're talking to them. So that is this week's show. We're going to kick off with the roundtable. Here we go.
All right, well, welcome to this week's Boundless Show. I'm guest host Andrew Hess, and with me this week, we have the Men's Roundtable, and I have the privilege of bringing in some of the godliest, manliest men I know and asking them questions about what it means to be a man. So let me go ahead and introduce who we have this week. Around the table, we have two people that have been around before. Mike Hallsmith, welcome.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Nathan Pyle.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
He's been on before, and then three newcomers to the Boundless podcast. First, Matt Ayersman, welcome.
Greetings, hello.
Stu Davis,
how you doing?
And Anthony Ashley,
hi.
Hello. All right, well, let's get started right away. Just wanted to start out and talk about, you know, when you guys were young, when we were young boys, who were those guys, those men that we looked up to? Whether it be your fathers or different men in your lives, and what were the things that you did with them or lessons that you learned from them, but or basically, you know, men who kind of showed you what it was to be a man from those early days.
Yeah, I guess I'll start off on this one. I had a youth pastor when I was young who, I guess about the time that I was in middle school, he became the high school youth pastor, but his daughter was in my grade, and so he spent a lot of time kind of down in our area hanging out with us, and as I got older, he just started inviting me around to just come do stuff. I mean, stuff being like spread gravel in his driveway and help him, you know, build a box or tear out a porch on the back of his house.
Free labor.
Yeah, so that's exactly what it was. So really, we spent a lot of time over a lot of rakes and shovels, and I eventually started working for him on his property. And we would spend a lot of time just tearing stuff down and building it back up again. And that produced a lot of conversations about what it looked like to be a man, to be a part of a family, to grow up, to be a Christian, all that kind of stuff.
And actually, I had a youth pastor as well, Pastor Steve, through junior high, and then he actually became my youth pastor for high school as well. And he was the epitome of a man's man. I mean, he grew up on a farm, baling hay. I mean, his arms and just, I mean, his stature was just gigantic. And I mean, just the best conversations as well. Whenever we do youth activities, he always made it a point to connect with one or two students at each activity instead of just being the youth pastor. It's like, hey, everyone, let's have fun. he always made it a point to get one-on-one with the kids. And just a really quality guy that was not afraid to lay his emotion on the line and show what was going on in his heart, and then also to address stuff, you know, head on, like a man.
Like a man.
Like a man.
I think my greatest childhood hero was MacGyver.
I was going to say Peter Parker, so
that's... Yeah, pretty much. My dad was very MacGyver-like as well. It's always seemed like no matter what was broken, no matter what problem needed to be solved, he could always fix it or build whatever needed to be built. And I think that hopefully passed on to me learning to approach problems proactively and as a challenge.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. My dad was a fixer too, and he always taught me when I was younger, you know, somebody put that together, you can take it apart. And that was one thing that always stuck with me, because I'd sit there looking at something, I couldn't even see a screw head or a bolt head or anything on it, and I'm thinking, well, how do I get this apart? Well, somebody made it, so it has to come apart. And I was like, thanks, Dad. Yeah. Like, show me a little more here. But I remember when I was younger, of course, this was when I was an early teenager, I got my first car, was a 68 Oldsmobile. And my dad and I worked on that night after night throughout the week. I look back on that now and I think, man, all the things that prevented me from doing that could have been detrimental to to growing up. You know, he kept me there in the garage. We bonded, and I may have stayed out of something really bad for my childhood at that time by being with my dad and doing that. So, and he also said, real men change their own oil. So he made sure to...
I'm not a man then.
He made sure to teach me that.
I assure you, a real man changes my oil every time.
Also, by the way, real men walk away from explosions.
Without flinching.
Yeah, that's a YouTube video to look up.
Yeah.
I was going to say, one guy that I looked up to when I was young, I had a great dad and great youth pastor as well, but the first person that comes to my mind was my cousin Paul, and he was like... He's in his mid-20s, and I was, you know, in grade school and junior high. And I think there's something about when you're a little kid and there's, like, a cool 20-something. Like, there's just something that just draws you to that.
Yeah.
And he was a doctor, so that's, like, a cool profession. And he was really into Star Wars, which is, like, you know, cool. And so I remember when I was young, like, just having someone like that, like a 20-something, just cool guy that you can look up to, I think is just really important. And then now it's just kind of funny because now I'm close to that age. And so it's like, okay, I remember the impact he had, so now what? What should I be doing now that I'm getting close to that age?
Yeah. I remember growing up, my dad grew up on a farm, and he was a school teacher. But in the summers, we'd go back down to my grandparents' farm and bale hay. And just remember those long days that probably when I was a kid, I woke up and I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to bale hay from 10 to 10 today. And it was just really long days, but I really learned the value of hard work. And to see my dad work hard, and just, you know, we'd all drive home and be exhausted. You know, it was almost like you got home and you were too tired to eat.
Yeah.
And, but you're just kind of baked in the sun. And I mean, it was just, but those were great summers. I look back and I'm like, that taught me so much that even today, you know, when I have a really long day or I'm working really hard, I think back like, man, I'm so glad that my dad taught me that at an early age, like what it was to work really hard and to provide for the family. So, I mean, that's just it's amazing how when you're young, those things that men kind of build into you, and they don't even know it. Like my dad probably didn't wake up and say, okay, today I'm going to teach my boys how to be hard workers. But that's what he did, you know, just by modeling that.
Do you think, though, that men then and men today have less, or men today have less opportunities than men of yesterday to be a man, to display manliness? I mean, we don't have many opportunities anymore to go out and bale hay. Or
it's true.
Work on a farm, but I mean, most of us sit in an office. Some of us work with kids, Stu, and
I think as the country has migrated from manual labor to service industries, we all come from. So, like you say, we're all in offices. We're all kind of sitting around all day. We don't really know what we're doing, but
not much of anything, really.
Yeah, we're just sitting on computers all day. They run everything. So it's definitely a different industry than it used to be. And I remember, you know, when my dad was young, in the '60s, he was in the Navy, and he came out of the Navy knowing how to cook huge meals for lots of people, and that's what he did at home. You know, he took things that he learned from the Navy, everything from how to shoot a gun to cook to clean, mm-hmm. and he brought that with him. So I think you still have these outlets, these avenues, like going into the service, mm-hmm. And specific labor pathways you can take that still maintain that. But a lot of it's professional work doesn't really require so much of that. Mm-hmm. What our parents had and our grandparents had.
Yeah. At what point when you guys were coming of age, you know, growing up, did you start to feel like a man? You know, was there a moment that you look back to that you're like, okay, I'm a man now? Or are there moments in your life where you felt like, you know, I'm becoming a man?
I'd say for me, it's my first jobs. I was homeschooled through high school, so I was able to work, you know, full-time from a very young age. And before that, my dad would take us out on jobs. And, it was through hard work that I first started feeling that way and discovering that. My dad would take my brother and I out to clear land in Texas. Acres of land are just covered with these trash trees called juniper trees, and he would cut them down, and my brothers and I would pile them up into like school bus size piles, and then, you know, burn them. And
you should just burn them in the field.
It was awesome. Anyways, yeah. So learning how to work hard, getting my first jobs, making money, all that was important for me.
Nice. Yeah, and actually, same here. I started cutting grass. I was kind of a late bloomer in life. And
yeah, you were.
How would you know? So I started cutting grass for this county, and we're operating heavy machinery. And before that, I had, you know, cut grass just with a small push mower and some weed trimming. But suddenly, I'm using this big walk behind deck, Gravely, and some heavy machinery, chainsaws and all that, and like it definitely a couple times nearly sawed off my hand and
nice.
It's though, yeah, yeah.
Isn't that a movie?
Definitely. Yeah. Steven Seagal, what? So it's weird how using heavy machinery makes us feel like men, or doing things with our hands like camping and cutting a tree down and having a massive burning pile of wood. For some reason, it just resonates with us that was the way God designed men to take care of life. Hmm. So unfortunately, that was in my late teens, I think 17 or 18. Up until then, I didn't do much camping or anything, but it seemed like as soon as I got the job cutting grass, things just kind of changed for me.
I think for me, I remember so many of the things that you guys have talked about, but what made it significant was a man handing it off to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the first time that I mowed the grass just behind a normal old mower. I mean, I was maybe 11 or 12 years old, and it was at somebody else's house, and we were cleaning up their house, getting ready to sell it. And the guy who owned the house, my parents weren't there. They didn't like the idea of me mowing, but the grass needed to be cut, and he said, "Hey, can you cut the grass?" And I was like, "No." And he said, "Sure you can. Here's the mower. Here's how you start it. Go do it." Okay. Yeah. And I mowed the grass, and I felt like a man because a man handed it off to me. And then, you know, a few years later, same thing. First time I'd ever used a chainsaw. My youth pastor, the one that always forced me into labor, he said, "Have you ever used a chainsaw?" "No." "Do you want to?" "No." "Well, I think you can. And that tree down there needs to be cut. Here's how you turn it on. Here's what you do. Here's what you don't do. Now go cut the tree." And I cut the tree down, and I felt like a man because a man trusted me to be able to do it. And I think it's the same thing with landing a big fish, you know, shooting a gun, you know, all those things that we consider to be manly things, but also things that I would say are just simple. Maybe they're just professional tasks, you know, or it's leading somebody in your business environment. And you think, "Well, I can't do that." And a lot of times for me, it's come because a man who's farther down the road than I am says, "You can do it. Here's what you do. Here's what you don't do. Now go do it." Mm-hmm. And you get it done. And it's like, okay, they trusted me for some reason. They saw something in me, and now I did it. So I think for me, those significant portions are when somebody saw something in me that maybe I didn't even see in myself. And it was mm-hmm. a man saying, "You can do this." And I did it. And that's when I think I started to, you know, really experience some of those kind of manhood moments.
Yeah, I think that's really important because, like, I don't have a whole lot of experience doing those super manly things. Like, I'm not your chainsaw guy. Like, I'll just throw that out there. But I think another part of learning how to be a man is the whole leadership thing, like what you were talking about. And I remember in college, I was an RA, And even, you know, even stupid things like when the electricity goes off or something, like everyone, there's, you know, 50 guys looking at you to fix the problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like that's a different kind of man feeling, but still I think that's something that's important, mm-hmm. that leadership growth and ability that men have.
Yeah. Yeah. I think to Stu's point, I kind of had that same experience where I was being handed off, you know, and this came from my father. He would travel a lot. He was a salesman. He would travel, and then he would be gone during the week. And then I had a brother who was 6 years older. He moved out of the house, so suddenly I'm the man of the house when my dad's gone. This was 13, 14. And I remember one time he was gone, and we had a big rainstorm, and our basement was starting to flood, which it did from time to time because and it wasn't finished, so it wasn't a big deal if water came down there. But I felt like since I was a man, I needed to keep an eye on things. So I sat at the basement steps and just kind of watch the water come in. Just like making sure it's not going over to that corner over by the laundry or anything like that. You know, I have to go get some sandbags out if it gets out of control. But I was just kind of sat there and watched it. And I remember I had my Game Boy, and I'm sitting there like thinking that I'm taking care of the house by watching the basement flood and making sure it doesn't flood too much. And, you know, still just keep an eye on it, but I still had Mario going on the Game Boy.
Yeah. To keep my true man right there.
So yeah, it was kind of a hybrid of technology and manliness there.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's kind of like the theme that everybody's bringing up is like responsibility. You know, when you're given different responsibility. I can remember one time when I was a teenager, and I was the oldest of three brothers. And I remember helping my grandparents one summer run the family hardware store, and they were going on vacation for like 3 weeks. And so my parents said I could go help my uncle run the place. And I had probably been driving a year, and they said, you know, you can drive down there. And it was like an hour and a half drive. And I remember being like, I mean, there's kind of that like, wait, can I drive that far? Like, do I know how to get there even? And I mean, that was back before you had an iPhone that just would tell you what to do. Yeah. You know, oh, you're lost? No, you're not. You have an iPhone. And but I remember, you know, driving down there and accomplishing something like that and being like, they trusted me to do it and I did it. Mm-hmm. And just how good that felt, like that, you know, I could be trusted. Because I think there's a time when you're young where you don't know if you can be trusted. You know, you want to be trusted, like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, give me the chainsaw or let me mow, but you don't know for sure, okay, am I really gonna be able to do this without chopping my arm off or you know, you just don't know. Yeah. But the more you do that kind of stuff and you're like, I can be trusted, I am responsible, I'm becoming a man.
Yeah, and actually, something dawned on me, Nathan, when you were talking about having that manliness passed off onto you, that actually the moment or the around the year that I felt like I really stepped into manliness was actually when my dad passed away. And this was about 10 years ago. I was in my late teens. I'd done, you know, the working for the cutting grass and all that stuff, but I think in my situation, it was a mantle that was passed to me that I didn't necessarily want or expect, but for some reason, the Lord's timing, it was handed to me at that point. And I have two older sisters and a mom as well who's not remarried. And I think just the overwhelming thought that, you know, even though there are other men that can help take care of my sisters and my mom, there is a responsibility for, I mean, even just carrying on the family name. Mm-hmm. I mean, no longer is dad hovering over me with the same last name, but, you know, taking care of stuff at my mom's place and making sure that I am keeping the unity with my family that my father took on. So, I mean, yeah, there's some instances where it's handed to us and, you know, we can either take it or leave it, but in this situation, it was handed to me, and I really didn't have a choice. I am thankful, though, that I was able to be there versus, you know, mom not having a son. Mm-hmm. So, actually, just hit me. So,
Kind of switch gears a little bit. How important has it been for you guys to have good friendships with other men?
I think it's crucial. I mean, there's, you know, a small handful of guys that I don't necessarily naturally cross paths with. They work in a different place, or maybe, you know, we go to a different church, have different circles of friends, whatever it is, but we have to go out of our ways in order to meet each other. But every time we do, it's like, man, we need to do this way more often than we already do. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's it's so helpful to have a group of guys, even if it's just a handful around me that, first of all, I mean, you know, we're kind of cut from the same cloth. at least spiritually, we feel like we're steering our lives and our families in similar directions, and we serve as a challenge for one another. And there are so many times that I'll walk away from, you know, a breakfast with a good friend of mine, or an opportunity to hang out at night, and I just feel like, man, he's a man's man. Not because, you know, he's ripping his shirt off and, you know, throwing people, you know, around all over the place, but because he's leading his family well, because he's taking responsibility for his wife and his children in a way that's godly and in a way that's courageous. And I feel like, man, I need to be more like him. And that goes just as much for me, at least, just as much for guys who are my age that I admire as much as guys who are 20, 25, 30 years farther down the road that I admire just as much.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like the definition of a man shifts, like at least our perspective from when we're younger. As we're getting older, it shifts. Like when we enter in that stage of marriage, fatherhood, and then into the later years of life, yeah, just seeing what truly a man means.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would say, like, the, you know, the guy that I pointed to earlier, the youth pastor of mine, I think the thing that I admired the most about him was not his ability to cut down a tree or to, you know, stack up a big pile of branches and light them on fire and show me how to do it, as much as it was his ability to maintain a sense of intentionality about the way that he lived his life, led his family. I mean, he was in full-time ministry, so I mean, he did it successfully and didn't let it eat his lunch, you know? And right. And I think that modeled some things for me that were beyond just, you know, the kind of the manly, brawny things that we think of define man. I mean, he's the best fisherman I know. The guy can, you know, I mean, he's just, he does so many things that I think we would consider, you know, manly things, but the manliest thing that he taught me was just living life with intentionality and leading your family well.
Mm-hmm. What I love about male friendships is guys understand insecurity and temptations so much better than girls do, the ones that we have as guys. And no offense to the women. I love the women out there, and they can understand a lot themselves, but no one gets that better than a guy.
Right.
And about what we struggle with on a confidence level, what we struggle with in terms of temptations in our lives. And if we were to bring up these temptations to a girl, they would get the totally wrong idea about where we're coming from and where our heart is. So I've always admired that about my guy friends, because I can go to them, tell them these thoughts, and I feel like this huge weight is off my shoulder. I just met up with some friends a couple of weeks ago, and one of them is getting married and had a lot of concerns about things going on there and the timing of the wedding and in-laws, you know. And it was just great for him to talk to us and say, look, this is something that every guy who's in this position is going to go through. And he told me later, was he was so glad that he came out that night and brought that up, because he was kind of ashamed to say that he was thinking all these things about marriage and insecurities, and he thought he was the only one that did. And it's just great to have guys around to validate how you feel in a way that women just can't do.
Right.
I think there's also a strength that can only be found in spending time with our brothers in Christ. And we need each other to, like, spot God's glory in each other and to, like, draw that out. There's a certain quality of relationship that only comes from spending time with other men who can see God's glory, His strength in you, and challenge you to be who you should in Christ.
Yeah.
I try to have man time like that every week if possible, and I'd probably go crazy without it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, and we're not taking anything away from, you know, marriage and our friendships with women and things like that. It's just, there is something unique about that. And I mean, scripture says as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And I think I've experienced that so many times, you know, where I'll be hanging out with guys and come away from that time and just be like, man, this is just one of those things that God has just built into our lives that we need to seek out. Yeah. And it is something we have to be proactive with sometimes, because, I mean, guys are busy, you know, a lot of times we have a lot of stuff going on, and sometimes we're not, you know, we don't initiate as well with other guys, like, hey, we should do something. But it's so important to balance our lives. And
we have that emotional wall up. I mean, the fear, the intentionality of getting together with guys is important, setting a habit of that, because that allows then, I mean, not saying like we need a cry fest or anything, but I mean, there are times when there are times that is beneficial and a legitimate way to express the emotion, like the temptation and just the brokenness of, this is my sin before a holy God. I've offended people around me. I've, you know, to face the image of God.
I think another thing that's great about male friendships is you may have a couple guys that are in marriage, pursuing marriage. They're kind of further along than some of the other guys, and that may bring these other guys up to their level and say, man, this is where I need to be. This is a maturity that I respect and that I need to admire and pursue myself. So I know for me, I have some friends that really made me do almost a 180 on, like, man, where am I right now as being single compared to these guys who are actively pursuing this? So it's an accountability thing, too, as well, because you can come to them and tell them anything, but if they're good friends and they can respond with, hey, this is where you need to be at this level in your life, and this is where I'm searching right now, and you need to be up here with me, and I want you there, too, so that's important.
That's a great lead into my next question, actually. For those of you around the table who are married, How does marriage change a man's life?
It shows me my utter desperate need for Jesus. Like, I've never been more aware of my need for grace than in marriage. So it makes me grateful for grace and just drives me to spend more time with God every day, because nothing reveals your selfishness and so on like marriage.
It's a daily reminder of how I need to, and I mean, I've only been married a couple months, but how much I need to die to myself and how much more I have to die to myself.
I think for me, I've been married for a little over 10 years. And I think for me, one of the things that I've realized over that period of time is that I'm a better man when I'm in partnership. I'm not a better man when I let somebody else live my life for me, but I'm a better man when there are people around me who are kind of like what we were talking about with, you know, mentors earlier, who are calling things out of me or maybe challenging me to be at a level where they know I can be, but maybe I haven't discovered for myself. And I find myself getting to that point quite a bit, quite often in my relationship with my wife, where there's something that is happening in our relationship or is happening in our family, is happening in the direction that we're traveling, and I need to do something because, A, I'm the man and the husband and the leader of our family, but also because I'm an equal partner in this relationship. And I am better at doing what it is that God's called me to do as a man, as a husband, as a father, as a youth pastor, and the things that I do in my role because of my relationship with my wife. In a way that I would still be Stu Davis and the things that I am without, but I'm better because I'm in partnership with somebody else. And I think that's just as fair to say about my relationship with my wife as it is with my partnership with the men that are around me who challenge me. But it's even more so, obviously, because this is somebody who is 100% bought into the partnership of my life.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
Yeah, I can totally agree with that, that marriage, you know, along with teaching me my need for grace, has made me very grateful to have a partner or a helpmeet, you know. And I think I truly am a better man because of my wife, and God uses her daily to encourage me, to call me out and challenge me, and she desires for me to be the best possible man I can be in Christ, and that's a huge, huge blessing.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah. As we kind of wrap down, wrap up.
Wrap around.
There's gonna be guys listening to this, and you know they've enjoyed this conversation. But what are some practical things you could give them? Like the guy who's listening is like, yeah, I really, you know, I want to grow as a man. What are a couple things that you'd give them that they can do starting today to just grow as men?
Yeah, I would say two very related things: one, find a mentor, and two, be one. And I think a lot of, I was actually just talking about this last night with a group of other guys as we had a discussion, but it's so easy to feel like you're on the road alone and that you just don't really know where to go. And just having one or two people in your life who you can call once a month, once a week, a couple times a year even, and just say, can I buy you a cup of coffee? Can we grab some lunch? For me, I mean, I sit down at those conversations and either in my head or on a piece of paper, I just have a list of questions. And sometimes it's leadership oriented, it's related to my ministry or it's related to my family. And so it's, you know, and so I'll come and I'll just, you know, start asking these questions. And to them, I think they just feel like they're just having lunch and it's conversation. And they walk away from that going, hey, that was a good time. I walk away feeling like I just drank from a fountain of gold, you know, I mean, and then, but then I'll do the same thing with a group of high school guys that I'm involved with. And to me, we're just hanging out and having breakfast and pancakes. And to them, they walk away feeling like, man, that was so enriching. And so here we are in May, and there's a whole class of guys that are getting ready to graduate that I've mentored for the last 2 or 3 years. And they're coming up to me and thanking me for the, you know, amazing input that, I've had in their life. And I'm just like, we had breakfast, you know? Yeah. And I think it's, so I think we sometimes kind of overestimate what we think it will take to mentor somebody. But then I think we also underestimate what we think it takes to find a mentor. And so I would say for me, becoming a man has always involved finding somebody who's farther down the road, and then also finding people who are behind me and saying, okay, I'm learning like you are, but let's at least just talk and have pancakes.
That's good.
I'm a mentor for Big Brothers Big Sisters, and it's really shown a lot for me. I'm the kid that they set me up with, he's 10 years old. And I remember when we first set it up, I went to meet him, and it was awkward, but it went well. And then the next week came around, and I was like, oh, I've got to set something up. I've got to go see this kid and hang out with him. And like, I didn't want to do it. You know, there's a part of me that's like, I don't want to do that. I want to stay home. I want to play video games. I want to do everything I did when I was a child. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but no, I signed up for this. I need to do this. Mm-hmm. So we've been hanging out now for about 2 months, I'd say, and just last weekend we went hiking, and it's to the point now where he's starting to imitate what I do. You know, if I jump up on a tree stump and raise my arms up and flex my muscles, then he does it too. So I'm a lot more aware of the influence I have over him now, and it's just growing a lot, and I feel like it's the least I could do. I'm not near my home state where my nieces and my nephew are. So the least I could do is pour into a kid whose father isn't around. Mm-hmm. And that's the scenario here. His father's not there, so I show up, and he calls me the day before I show up, or he calls me like a few hours before I show up and wants to know exactly when I'll be there so he doesn't miss me, like he's going anywhere. I mean, he's 10. So it's a great feeling, it's getting better each time.
I would say look for the glory, the specific expressions of God's glory and strength in the men around you, and encourage that. If you're living from your weakness or your insecurity, things like that, you will more easily see their weaknesses and try to build yourself up that way. But if you're living from your strength and want to grow, like become more confident, encourage the guys around you. Look for God's glory in them and build it up however you can.
Yeah, just something basic, like what Stu was saying about being intentional. Definitely finding a mentor that you can meet with on occasion. That has greatly benefited me, and especially coming up to marriage, just the ability that guy was able to pour into my life and answer all those questions. And then look for those opportunities, whether it's big brothers, big sisters kind of thing. Also, I mean, in your area, like my thing is music, and I love drums. And so looking for opportunities that I can encourage the younger drummers, younger musicians to pursue and run hard after, God's presence, worship, heartfelt worship, not making it a show. And so any opportunity that I have to have those conversations, even if it is coming up and putting your hand on their back and saying, hey, what's up? How you doing? I mean, that, Stu, like you were saying, that goes a long way. It may not be very much to us, but I mean, I can think of the guys that did that to me, and that's what stuck with me.
Great. I think the mentor thing is probably the biggest thing. But one thing I've been thinking about lately is the idea of confidence versus arrogance, and kind of like it's important to be confident as a man. But I think some men think that you have to be overly confident. Like they try to overemphasize their confidence. Mm. And it's funny because like sometimes I'll watch an interview with like some celebrity that we would all think is really, really manly, you know?
Chuck Norris.
Yeah. MacGyver.
Yeah. Maybe not. I can't think of a specific example, but some interviews you watch, you can tell like even though you think they're manly, like you can tell they're very insecure. Like they're trying so hard to be funny, or they're trying so hard to come across a certain way, and you can tell they're not confident in who they are. Mm-hmm. I think that's important too, is like, even if you're not the tough, manly man, like, you know, get your life in line with what God has planned for you, but at the same time, just be confident in who you are. Don't try to be something that you're not. Just be confident in who you are and take advantage of the opportunities that are given to you.
Mm. Those have been great, guys. Good stuff. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Thanks. Feeling like I got a front row seat.
Well, hey, for this week's culture segment, I'm very privileged to be in studio with Joe White. Joe, welcome.
Thank you, Lisa. It's good to be with you.
All right. Well, a lot of folks in our audience know of you probably as the Kanakut guy. Mm. Many of them probably have gone to your camps and certainly familiar with it. And obviously, we have many students who've come through our institute here at Focus on the Family. And so we're familiar with all that you've done out there in the Midwest and beyond. You obviously not only involved with the camps, but you are founder and president of what we call Men at the Cross, and folks can find out about that at menatthecross.org. But really a neat movement that we want to talk about today, because our show this week really is focusing on guys. Hmm. And, you know, sometimes I think guys feel left out, especially here at Boundless. We talk a lot about relationships and we talk a lot about the church and moving towards maturity. And it's something that everyone says, well, women just do that naturally and women are relational and women are this. Well, what about the men? What is there for them? And I know that you have a real passion, Joe, for understanding how men can reach men, first of all. And I love the idea here. You say, in fact, when I was reading on your website, it says, you believe in the philosophy of loving a man to Jesus until he's ready to love another man to Jesus. It would take 10 years to reach our world if each man would spend 6 months with another man to equip him, to equip another and another and another until the world has known the saving grace of Jesus Christ. So really, this is about evangelism. It's about discipleship. It's about mentorship. It's really the whole ball of wax as it is. So the first question I want to ask you is, why, especially in the church, and we could talk about the culture as a whole, we could talk about the world, we could talk about the breakdown of men in the family, and we probably will touch on that. But the question I want to ask you first is, why are men not reaching men?
You know, it's, Lisa, it's in the heart of every man to have a legacy. Mm-hmm. Whether a man is single or married, a dad or a granddad, it's in the heart of every man to have a legacy. And it's in the heart of every man to do something greater than himself. And the most fun thing about mentoring, and something that, you know, it was the idea of the century, the first century. And I believe that mentoring and discipleship is the idea of the century in the 21st century as well. It's the greatest thing that a guy can do. But if you were a guy and you were listening, and you could speak to 10,000 men every night, and every single guy for 365 days a year, every single guy began to trust Christ because of the speech you made. Would you consider that an incredible use of your time? 10,000 men every night. Well, in 2,000 years, you could reach the world. And that's literally the mathematics. 10,000 nights times 365 times 2,000 years, you could reach the world. But if you just took one guy and loved that guy to Jesus, I mean, just took him alongside you, mentored him, discipled him, and gave him the confidence to mentor and disciple another man. If just two guys could do that every 6 months, in 16 years, you could reach over 8,500,000 people. Hmm. Just sharing your life with a younger believer or a younger person in the faith, I believe, is the most significant thing for a legacy that a guy can possibly do. And Lisa, watching the church wake up to this old reality that's now becoming a new reality of Paul-Timothy relationships is the most fun thing I've ever seen in my life.
So how can the church wake up to this? Because we have a lot of guys that write in that say, oh, I can't even find fellowship with the men in my church. There are no active men's Bible studies. It's like we try to get something going and it just fizzles out. Where can I get this?
Well, for openers, menatthecross.org. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in 69 cities now around the country, and our dream is to be in a place in the country that every man can drive to in just 3 or 4 hours. But at the Men at the Cross conferences, and our conferences are from 12 years old to 95 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, we have high school, you know, events within our events, and then college students and young adults and older adults. But at the Men at the Cross conferences, all the men who come, and sometimes we'll have 500 guys, sometimes we'll have thousands of guys, but every man walks out, one, tremendously encouraged because they find men in their community who are passionate about changing this world for Christ. But they also walk out each looking for their Timothys. And Lisa, here's where it's so down to earth. Some guys will walk out and they'll begin to disciple their dads. Hmm. Who are older men who've never been discipled. Some guys will begin to disciple their little brothers or their big brothers who are not walking with Christ. Some guys like me will take a high school group. I've got 9 high school guys that I'm mentoring and discipling right now, as old as I am, and meet with them every Monday night. It's the highlight of the week. Some guys will take, like one of my Timothys that I'm mentoring was up on a water tower with a fifth of whiskey in his hand trying to jump off and kill himself. Well, I got to, he came down from the tower. I got to lead him to Christ, and now I get to disciple him once a week. 2 other guys didn't have dads. And I just came into their life and said, hey, could I be the daddy that you don't have right now? So guys can find that kind of, really, it gives you new hope in your spiritual life. You don't have to go to seminary. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to. You don't have to get a PhD in theology.
Yeah.
All you got to do is begin to pray for Timothy's. And when you pray for Timothy's, guys, God begins to line them up on the runway like airplanes ready to take off.
Huh. What does men's discipleship look like? Can it look a number of different ways?
You know what? It really can. You know, discipleship is 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 8, where Paul says, we not only gave you the gospel of God, but also our very lives, because you became very dear to us. So discipleship, first of all, is life on life. It's me reaching out to the guy on the water tower and saying, hey, you know what? Maybe your daddy didn't love you, but I'm going to grow to love you, and I'm going to find in you the things that your daddy never found in you. So it's beginning just to care for a guy. And then it's opening the word with a guy. We have a one-to-one discipleship book, which I call Discipleship for Dummies. I'm a defensive lineman. I'm an old football coach. You know, there's no great brains here. But the book, which, by the way, on the website is free for life. You can download it, one-to-one discipleship off the Men at the Cross website, free for life. And so we've got hundreds of thousands of guys around the country who are downloading this book. And all you do is go to Starbucks with a guy, you know, go down to McDonald's or wherever you know, Bob Evans or wherever you like to get a cup of coffee, and just sit with this guy for an hour a week and begin to pour scripture into the heart of this guy from this very simple plan. I think Paul in Romans 1:12 really kind of enabled every man to do this, Lisa. He said, you know what? He said, it's not that I give you a spiritual gift. Paul said, it's that I can be encouraged together with you, each of us, by the other's faith, both yours and mine. So the Paul grows and the Timothy grows, and together both of them encourage each other in the faith. So fellas, anybody can get a young Timothy and begin to disciple that young man and watch his life change. You'll change his DNA. You'll change his eternity and everything about his life.
Yeah. So every guy who's listening right now is saying, I want Joe White to be my discipler. I want him to mentor me. But if you were to sit down with our audience, with these guys one-on-one, what would you say to young adult men, maybe in their 20s, 30s, guys who are single, guys who are transitioning into career, maybe thinking about relationships and marriage? What do they need to know?
Well, first of all, you know, it's God's mandate on our life. Every believer is a disciple maker. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jesus said it, Matthew 28:19, go therefore and make disciples, he said. Mm-hmm. And so we've got the mantle on us as guys. And the second thing I'd say is you can do it. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example. The other night we did a men's event, Men at the Cross in the Boot Hill of Missouri, Cape Girardeau. And this guy had been a meth addict for 16 years. He'd gone to prison. He'd gotten out of prison. He was clean for 5 years. He went to our men's conference, and he prayed for a Timothy. A guy came up to him who also had been on meth, and they met there at the conference, and they made a Paul-Timothy relationship. And the young guy who was just getting out of meth came to this guy who'd, you know, been clean for 5 years. And he said, I need somebody who's been through what I've been through to disciple me. So whatever wounds or afflictions or a guy has, and most guys don't disciple because we're afraid we'll fail. But no matter what you've done or what you haven't done in your life, somebody needs. If you've been abused, if your parents were divorced, if you've been on drugs or alcohol, but now you're a follower of Christ, there's somebody around you who's having the same struggles that you had, who's looking for an older guy just like you to get in their life and begin to walk alongside them and disciple them from God's word. Everybody can do it.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say, you know, you've talked to a lot of young men throughout your years through the camps and through elsewhere, and obviously you've done a lot of radio and TV, probably have talked to a lot of men specifically. What are you seeing as the challenges that they're facing, really? I mean, even men in the church who have insecurities and struggles, what really are young men out there dealing with today?
Lisa, the honest answer is most guys have had their heart wounded either in our childhood by an absentee father, perhaps by an ex-lover, perhaps by a boss or a coach. And when a guy gets wounded, it develops a cavity in our heart. And we don't know what to do with that cavity in our heart. And so in our quiet anger, we begin to fill that cavity with pornography or with alcohol or with drugs or with controlling relationships with women. And we don't know what to do with that because we can't fix the addiction until somehow somebody as a mentor has gone down or a counselor and helped us unpack the anger in our heart. But when a guy comes alongside a young man with anger or bitterness in his heart that's built this void, this cavity, and helps us understand, you know what? You can take that anger to the cross. And if you're listening today, if you have been a young man who was hurt, picked on, bullied, abused, you know, knocked down by somebody, you can go to the cross. And I don't want to make it sound just like some simple religious trick, but I'm telling you, because I've done it. You can go to the cross and give that anger to Christ and say, Jesus, love me there. And you can literally nail that anger and bitterness to the cross. And you can say, Jesus, I invite you into that place where I've been angry. Love me there, Lord. Be the daddy that I never had. You know, I speak to college teams and pro teams and stuff, and I see these men doing that in locker rooms. They let Jesus become the father to the fatherless. And as he parents those old angry void places in your life, then you can say, now my heart is full of your love, Jesus. Now I can leave pornography and drugs and alcohol for a lifetime. Hmm.
So if men do this, if they really believe this and they really embrace it and really start going to the cross and applying biblical truth, how will they and the church and families in the world look different? What kind of transformation are we talking about?
You know what? I'm going to the Green Bay Packers a few years ago and then down to the Jaguars. And, you know, I said, God, what do I tell these guys? I'm laying down about to go to sleep. Two successive weeks. Both teams are going to play the Cowboys. And God gives me the picture of a chain link in my mind. And in my mind, he says, tell them what it means to be a bondservant of Jesus. And so I go into those locker rooms, you know, before the games, and I tell them about God being the father to the fatherless, how he can be the dad that you never had, and he can replace that anger with love. And I said, if there's one guy in this locker room who would say, Jesus, I want to live for you as you died for me, here's my life. And Reggie White's the first guy that gets up, and he comes up and he takes this chain link out of my hand, and he's like a bondservant of Jesus. I'm going to give Jesus everything I've got. I'm going to give my whole heart. And then here comes 24 Green Bay Packers. Well, I'm seeing, you know, every man has one link of chain on their heart. I'm either chained to porn, or I'm chained to my past, or I'm chained to an idol, or I'm chained to Christ. But here comes these players, you know, locker rooms all over the country becoming bondservants of Jesus. Lisa, that's the commitment that changes a man. That's the commitment that changes a church. That's the commitment that changes a marriage and a home. When a man or a woman says, Jesus, you be my master. I'm going to be your bondservant. You didn't enslave me, but I love you so much that I'm going to let my heart be enslaved to you. I give you my heart. That incredible commitment of love takes all these other chain links that a man carries with porn and anger and bitterness off his heart as he chains his heart to Christ. The players put their chain links around their neck. They put them on their laces of their cleats. They put them on their watch bands. And it literally changes locker rooms. It changes lives. It changes teams. It changes families. Be a bondservant of Jesus, man. It changes everything.
Okay, so we started out this conversation talking about legacy, and you talked about how that's so important, especially for men. What, Joe, is your legacy? What's it going to be?
Well, you know what? At the end of Paul's life, you know, 1 Thessalonians 2:19, you know, Paul said, who is my hope, my joy, my crown of exaltation? And he's not talking about the diadema. He's not talking about the king's crown. He's talking about the victor's crown. You know, old coaches and guys like me who just, you know, just want to see the world come to Christ, you know, all Paul wanted was just for Jesus to say, you know what, well done. And what Paul is saying is my crown that I get to lay at Jesus's feet is Timothy's by my side, that I'll see guys at Christ's coming, who by God's grace, I've been a little bitty part of getting them to Christ's coming by helping them become believers. That's all we want, least, is to see men standing at the throne of grace, because somehow, you know, God used old guys like us, as undeserving as we are, to get involved in these men's lives and to lead them to Christ. That's all that matters. Hmm.
That's big stuff. That's relationships. That's souls. I mean, that's eternal. So that's some big stuff. All right. We have been talking with Joe White. Like we said, menatthecross.org is where you can find out more about this. Guys, it's obvious that he loves you, that he has a passion for men of this generation. And so be a part of this. Go to the website, find out what it's about, see how you can start right where you are in your church, in your men's small group, in your the guys you're living with, wherever that is. What you can do to not only avail yourself of older mentors to get into your lives, but that you can look behind you and see the guys who are coming up behind you, the high schoolers, the other guys who are in your lives who need you to start speaking to them right now. So, Joe, thanks so much for this challenge. Thanks for being in prayer for these men. We know that you are and that you really are passionate about building into men so that that exponentially can happen. I think it is happening. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Lisa. God bless you for what you're doing.
Ready, set, go. This is take 37, let it roll. I'm gonna get it right this time. Gonna fight this time. This time I'm for real. Look at me go. I'm off flying straight as an arrow. But then I feel the wind blowing. Gravity sets in. And I don't know how to deal. I always start so strong.
We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have John Thomas on the line. John, welcome.
Hey, Lisa. Thank you.
Well, people are so excited to hear your voice instead of just hearing your voice in print.
I know. It's nice. I'm excited about the opportunity.
This way they know that you're real and it's not just me answering boundless answer questions and acting like I'm a man.
Doing the John Thomas ghostwriting.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, I'm one of those people that just always wants to share wisdom with men.
I know it.
I have so many things to say.
And you have good wisdom to share.
I have so many just compelling things to say to the men, but most of the time they don't want to listen to me. So we have to bring you in.
It's good for us to hear from women a lot, Lisa. Well, so don't stop doing
that. We try. Well, you are on for today, and we've got a great question for you. And I'm going to just kick it off here by reading it. So, this listener says, I have been dating my girlfriend for about a month and a half. We have a very successful relationship, and I love us. I can see myself marrying this girl one day. My problem is this. I want to keep her pure until marriage, and I want to lead her toward the Lord, not into sin. However, she feels like I don't want her sexually and that I'm not attracted to her. Neither of those is true, and I've told her that, but it doesn't help. She wants me to show that I'm attracted to her. My question is, how can a man keep his girlfriend pure and blameless before the Lord, but still show that he wants her and is attracted to her?
That is such a great question, and we ought to first just congratulate the guy for having great motives in his relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that is excellent what he's attempting to do. And it's always hard sometimes to know exactly what are the nuances of this particular relationship, because they're all a little bit different, because everybody's a little bit different. But when I hear that, it makes me wonder, is he maybe a little on the cold side? And I want to make sure that he understands that there is appropriate expressions of affection that are non-sexual.
Okay.
And so, you know, if he's going so far to the extreme where he doesn't, you know, want to sit close, he doesn't want to hold hands, those kinds of things, he doesn't want to make you know, eye contact, all of those things are good and healthy for a relationship, and they don't have to be sexual at all. It's just a good, appropriate expression of affection.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, first of all, you know, he needs to kind of ask himself, well, am I a little on the cold side when it comes to affection? And if so, that might be something he needs to work on.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I think of is on her side. I mean, all of us want to know that we are desired and desirable by somebody.
Right.
And a lot of times, if we just know that, we're good. You know, we don't need a lot of touch necessarily to be convinced of that. We don't need make out on the couch to be convinced of that. We just need to know it. And so now she might have some kind of history where that's the only way it's been communicated to her before, is, you know, going down the path that is impure. And if that's the case, then that kind of needs to be adjusted. She needs to adjust her thinking about what is the right way to have that communicated to you. But I think that if she and he could have a conversation about, you know, well, I do believe all these things about you, and I want to make sure that you know these things, but I want to express it in a way that is appropriate biblically. And, you know, she may not understand a guy's wiring, that what might not be sexual affection to her, it might be for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his engine gets started up a little sooner than she does, and we've heard it said before, a guy is a microwave in that department, and a girl's a crock pot. And she's wondering, well, why isn't he, these sorts of expressions are not a temptation for me, of any sexual nature, but they could be for him.
Right. Okay.
And so we have to understand what is, you know, what he is capable of without getting his engine going.
Yeah.
And she needs to respect that and understand that and not take him down a road that makes, you know, temptation a difficult thing for him.
Sure.
But at the same time, he doesn't need to be so afraid of expressing some sort of affection that he expresses none.
Right.
And the appropriate amount is great, and I would put in that, it's different for different people, but I would say hold hands, you know, sit close, those sorts of things, make eye contact, those kinds of things are great, and they let her know she's desired and she's special, and at the same time, you know, that keeps the relationship pure.
Yeah. I think it's helpful that, you know, he does indicate in the letter, in the piece here, that, you know, he has told her that he is attracted to her. You know, he says, I've told her that. And, you know, there's a certain element to that where she does need to believe him. I mean, it's
that's right.
she's got to take him at his word and believe him. And it has only been a month and a half. And I'm kind of like, girl, what are you expecting after a month and a half? Because, you know, so maybe he can tell her as well, you know, more often that she looks beautiful, or to say, you know, to quote Flight of the Conchords, you're the most beautiful girl in the room. You could be a part-time model.
Sure. What is the kind of communication and love language she gets, and find that and do that.
Right.
But you know that you mentioned that part of the young relationship. I mean, this is a fresh relationship, which makes me wonder: is she used to relationships going further down the road more quickly?
Faster. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From just maybe doing it in past ways, not the best way.
Right.
And so, let's just say that she's, you know, the guys that she's dated in the past, the way they've expressed it is they've done it in sexual ways that aren't appropriate. Then she might be wondering, why isn't that happening here?
Exactly.
And it could be that she just doesn't understand what he's trying to do.
Right. Well, and again, and I think I would just say in closing here that another responsibility he has, because he says, I can see myself marrying this girl one day. Okay, so he better have it in his head that he's moving this relationship along. If he really believes that, you know, he needs to move that along, because then ultimately, you know, if they do get married, they can express themselves sexually, and that's fine, you know, but not stagnate in this thing for 3 years where then she's like, so anyway, we're still holding hands and it hasn't gone anywhere.
Right, right. And is this going anywhere?
Right.
And again, maybe the only way she knows, and maybe the only way she knows how to judge whether a relationship is moving forward is in that department.
Right.
And that needs to change.
Yeah. All right. Well, great thoughts, John, on this. I think that's helpful. And I think it's great that you tackled it from both sides of what they're both responsible for, because I think there's a part that they both have to play in this. So that's some good practical advice in that. So thanks so much.
Good. My pleasure.
Well, that is it, everyone, for this week's Boundless Show. We want to hear from you. Write to us, editor@boundless.org, so we can address your questions on a future show. Until then, make sure that you're catching up on all the previous questions, not only the ones that John answers for us, but the ones from everyone else, including Candace and our counselors and some of our pastors. We want to make sure that you are availing yourselves of that wisdom. Until next week, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focused on the family.